91.1 HD Education Matters. Thank you and have a great day.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenny Aquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
And hello, welcome to Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring, your host for today, and I'm very excited to be talking with folks about the Tall Ships coming to Kenosha this summer. Seems like a long place away when we're looking at snow, rain, slush, ice, repeat, but that gives us something to live for. We know that there's going to be a wonderful event at our lakefront that we haven't seen for a long time. So I'd like to welcome Chris Coachman from the City of Kenosha. She's the Community Relations Liaison. Welcome.
Thank you.
We have Patty Locke, who is consulting for Kenosha Tall Ships, the event coming in August. And we have Captain Andrew Sadock, who is the captain of the Red Witch. And many people in Kenosha and Racine, I'm sure, have seen the Red Witch out on our lakefront. But we're going to get to know a lot more about that and how it fits into the bigger scheme of what this event is all about. So welcome, and let's talk about the event itself. If you can give me a very quick description of what we might see as we're going down to the harbor and tall ships. What's it all about?
Thanks, Jane. The city's really excited to be welcoming seven tall ships coming to our harbor on the afternoon of Thursday, August 1st. People we expect will be lining the lakefront parks to view these ships coming in a parade of sail led by our own Red Witch. From Pennoyer Park Bandshell down to Kemper Center, you can catch a glimpse of the ships as they come in. But the best view is going to be down by the harbor as the ships come in for docking. And we kick off our peanut butter and jam concert with music, food vendors, etc. People can kick back, enjoy the music, and see the ships. But they're not ready for touring yet. That just builds the anticipation. On Friday morning, August 2nd at 10 a.m., the festival opens, and the ships will be available for tours. It is a ticketed event because it's pretty unique and special to bring in the ships, but there is a cost related to that. So it is a ticketed event where people may tour any or all of the five ships while they're there. And in between, I'm sure they'll enjoy some food, entertainment, some beverages. We'll have a lot going on, art tent and more. So that's Friday, and the festival continues on Saturday and Sunday as well, with opportunities for people to tour the festival. We certainly also hope people take the opportunity to sail away during the tall ships and board either Red Witch or the Appledore 4 out of Bay City, Michigan. Those two ships will be located on the North Harbor Wall near the Kenosha Yacht Club and Sailing Center, and people may buy a ticket and go out on an 80-minute day sail or even a two-hour sunset cruise.
Oh my gosh, what a great opportunity. That sounds wonderful. And I know we'll talk a little bit more in detail on what is happening at what time a little bit later on in the program, but it sounds like there's a great deal going on for the casual visitor who is going to come and enjoy the event. But I know it's really something that's part of a much bigger commitment to tall ships. And maybe, Patty, you can talk a bit more about that, that this isn't just, oh, it's a Kenosha event, we brought the ships, yay.
Well, it is a big deal, just coming into the Great Lakes. One of the things that happens is that we're tall. A couple of these ships are over 131 feet tall, which if you think of a ship floor, I mean a building floor is 10 feet, so we're 10 stories tall. Okay, so we are quite tall. And to be able to come into the St. Lawrence Seaway, your mast can't be any taller than 137 feet. in order to get onto the bridges. So only a certain number of ships, certain kind of ship, is able to come in. So we're lucky to get the seven that we do. And there is an organization that we're working with called Tall Ships America. They're out of Newport, Rhode Island. And they're the ones that recruit the vessels and then set up port cities for these ships to go to. And the key factor with those port cities is that they have to have a deep draft dock. And Kenosha does. Mm. So our lead-in city in years past was always Chicago. And when Chicago said no, they weren't going to be prepared to take the ships in 2019, Kenosha said, we'll do it because it's such a wonderful phenomena. And people will travel 4 hours to see the tall ships. It's just something they don't get to see every day. And I actually think they live vicariously through the thought of getting to go and act like a sailor.
I think that that's so true. And I was saying to Andrew earlier, just seeing the ship out kind of in my backyard floating around, I mean, it's just magical. And I can remember, and we can talk about that a little bit, as I know some of the ships were here longer time ago than I had realized. Mm-hmm. And I can just remember in the morning seeing them out there, and you really are transported back in time and lets your imagination go wild. Tell me a bit about the history of tall ships as it relates to Kenosha, and really why we were lucky enough to, you could say, yes, we can take them, but I know it's not quite that easy.
Well, you almost need a visit to the History Center to really get the true sense of what's going on with our harbor. And what does it go back to? 1835. I'm looking at Chris, trying to recall
something
the facts.
Like that.
Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
And so, and we know that these ships plied their trade and they came in. And Andrew can tell you, Redwich was one of those very vessels where the ships would come in and they would be the home. And then once the home was built on land, it became the school. And once the school was built, then those ships went out and carried Christmas trees and lumber. And then after a while, they took the sails down and they just, you know, had their masts up. And so that's how the Midwest and the Great Lakes was developed as an economy here. So we're kind of going back to that. It's really kind of fun to be able to showcase our harbor, Southport, as everyone knew it then, and now it's Kenosha. And so to be able to bring these big vessels in and I'm going to toss it to Andrew here because these ships, Redwich is the smallest that's coming in, actually, at 77 feet.
Okay, that's big.
And that's big. I know, exactly. And then our next one up is 89. Her name is Appledore. And what kind of a ship is Appledore?
So to my understanding, Appledore is similar to Redwich. She's a two-masted gaff rig schooner. I can explain that, but I don't think we have enough time for the explanation.
Maybe we will toward the end, but let's see.
Okay, very good.
And then some of our other vessels that are traveling so far, and it also kicks in a lot of our history, one of them is the U.S. brig Niagara. And Niagara was the ship that Commodore Oliver Hazard Perry jumped on to win the Battle of Lake Erie, also known as the Battle of Put-in Bay, on September 10th, 1813. And so that was the turning point for the Americans in the War of 1812. In our history books, it was just a skirmish, but it was a big deal.
Yeah.
And so and the war kind of petered out in Louisiana, you know, eventually. But for us, you know, that's what the reason for being is. So that history, it's Great Lakes history. So it's kind of fun to be able to have a ship of that magnitude. And they live and breathe 18th century. You can't stand up downstairs. The shower is a canvas curtain. You know, they use lake water for showering, and they use a wood stove. And, I mean, it's very realistic.
And I would like to talk a little bit more about that. And that's the whole learning aspect of these ships. Yes, you can go down and probably get your meatball bomber, but the really opportunity for students to learn, people of all ages, to learn about life back then and how a ship was constructed is just amazing. If you can talk about the different opportunities for learning.
Sure, I'd love to, and I'm going to toss this to Andrew as well in a second. One of the things that the mayor wanted us to make sure we did was share this opportunity with as many people as possible around Kenosha, because we live on Lake Michigan, and people forget. You go a mile away, and they all of a sudden they say, I don't, you know, they forget they live on Lake Michigan, and I drink Lake Michigan water. So we want to make sure that we took care of a lot of children and kids and got their feet wet, I like to say. And so we're, with all these sailaways, Redwich being one of them, Appledore being the other one, they're going to go out 5 times a day for 80 minutes, and you can go out and hoist sails and kind of get a sense of what it feels like. So I'm working with groups like the YMCA, the Boys and Girls Club, and other youth-oriented groups, even Mariner Girl Scouts is another group, Key Club, whatever. Have the kids come down, learn how to tie knots, talk to the crew, and then some kids, as they get a little older, we'll send them out and do the 80 minutes out. And then we have a very special group with in partnership with the Kenosha Yacht Club, where four kids from their sailing center will sail on the Dennis Sullivan, one of the ships. It's Wisconsin's own ship, Milwaukee. And so they're going to take those four kids, and we're going to find four more, and they'll get to do a distance sail for 3 days.
Oh,
and they'll
gosh.
Sail into Kenosha with us. So Andrew takes these kids out all the time.
And tell me, you hinted at it earlier, some detail as to the life on a ship. What can these students expect to experience? Are they going to have their cell phones with them? Or
It's very funny you bring that up. This summer, we were very blessed, and there was a group of 15 students from China, high school kids, who came to the States for education, and they were hooked up through an organization that's basically youth leadership that's out of Lake Forest Academy in Illinois. And so they brought the kids up to us, and they basically said, these kids are going to be with you 6 hours on a Tuesday, 6 hours on Wednesday, 3 hours on a Thursday. So we have 15 hours of education we'd like these children to experience. So we said, great, and we assumed that they had a very strong itinerary, and they came up, and they had three teachers with them, and they got to the boat, and then they said, okay, what do you want to do? And I'm like, you guys were the ones putting together your itinerary, not us. They said, no, it's yours. So we were like, wonderful. So we came up with all sorts of fun exercises for the kids, actually learning experiences. But you mentioned cell phones. So the first thing we noticed, at least with these children from China, was that as long as they had their cell phones, they had zero attention on us and on the boat. We didn't exist. Finally, after about an hour, we realized, take the cell phones away, and we'll be good. And then they were just wonderful. So we actually ended up teaching them the knots. We taught them how the boat was constructed. We actually showed them how to sail. We had them taking the helm. We had them raising sail. We actually had them lowering sail. We had them below decks during certain functions when we need certain things done. We taught them how to communicate. We actually do a lot of team building for corporations as well regarding communication. So we taught them how we communicate on a ship, because communication has to be very precise. You know, it really is a matter of, you know, there's lives at stake. Everything has to be done properly. So we had a lot of fun, but they really loved the experience. We even had them go aloft, which was a very interesting experience for most of them.
And, aloft, meaning climbing the mast?
Well, not climbing the mast. Technically what we did was we hooked a halyard to them with two halyards and a belt, two belts, so that we had a safety line on them. And we lifted them only about 5 feet so they could start to get an idea of what it's like to go up.
Yeah, 5 would be enough.
But it was enough, yeah. And so it was a good photo op for them, and it was a lot of fun.
It sounds very cool, and I do want to talk more about what it's like to sail a ship like that compared to, you know, Dad's motorboat. But first, let's go back to talking about kind of a list of ships that we can expect to see, and they're different types, I understand, three different types?
Well, it's a rigging configuration, so there could be a schooner, could be a bark, could be a brigantine, so that's what defines what a ship is. And so we have a number of them coming in. We have a number of schooners, one bark, one brigantine, and the rest are schooners, yeah. So the ships we have coming in, we have two that are going to conduct sailaways, and that'll be Redwich and Appledore that we've talked about. And then Dennis Sullivan from Milwaukee, she's also a schooner, and Wisconsin's flagship. Brig Niagara that we talked about, she is a brig also. Blue Nose 2 from Nova Scotia. And she is a schooner, technically a schooner. And the bark, Picton Castle, and she's the one that's sailing around the world right now. In fact, she just left Madagascar. So if you go on her website, you can follow her as she goes. It's pretty fun. But when we talk about the experience, and I have to really thank Walt Disney when they came out with all the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. People all of a sudden went, okay, now I get it. Because when I first started in this business, I would say, like, the Bounty. So it depends upon who you were talking to. Mutiny on the Bounty was the movie of the day, depending upon the age that you were talking to. And they kind of go, oh, yeah, huh, okay. And then I would go, Nina and Pinta. Oh, everybody colored Nina and Pinta when they were growing up.
Yeah.
And then when Pirates came out, everybody went, okay, now I get it. All right. So thank you, Johnny Depp and Captain Jack Sparrow. So all of a sudden, everybody kind of got it. And I'd have to say that the one comment we get when the fleet comes in is, why wasn't this around when I was a kid? And the dynamic that Andrew was just talking about with these Chinese kids, that's something that we actually call sail training. And it's the art of learning how to sail as a byproduct of sail training. You just happen to be on a ship, and if you take good care of her, she'll take good care of you. And that's a mantra that we all live by. It's a living classroom, if you will. Kids learn leadership learning as a result of being on board and taking care of the vessel. And so we like to say that we turn lives around. So when the mayor said, I want to make sure the kids get this, we're making sure that they do come down to the water and can have a hands-on experience. But not just the kids. We want mom and dad to do it too, because it was around when they were a kid. It's been around for 200 years. But now you can get to go. Come sail with us.
You can touch it, feel it, and experience
it. Do it, yeah,
that.
Exactly.
I saw a lot about learning about water conservation as well. So you're not only learning about the ship and leadership and working together, but you're also talking about the body of water on which you're floating. So how is that being handled?
Well, I'm glad you're asking that question, because it's kind of an initiative that we really want to promote, the whole blue-green dynamic. You know, we forget that we do drink Lake Michigan water. I live 42 miles west, and I'm very grateful that I get to drink Lake Michigan water. And here in Kenosha, it's pretty special to be inside the watershed. But what we want to make sure people understand is that we can't live without water, and these ships can't sail without water. So it's a wonderful opportunity to have people not just get to know the ships, but have that takeaway of, I could turn off my shower, or take a shorter shower, or turn off the water while I'm brushing my teeth. And so if we could do more of a zero waste, single use plastics, and you know, increase some of that that reduction as much as we can, and go more blue green, I think people will appreciate it more, and the ships raise that awareness. So it's kind of exciting to do it.
As a captain, is that something you mentioned when you thought that the Chinese visitors were going to come with their curriculum, and once you found out they didn't have it, you were pretty pleased about that. It sounded like you were prepared with your own approach or curriculum. In talking about both water conservation and the body of water as well as the ships itself, I guess, what's your shtick? You know, what are you teaching, and how do you prepare for that? Because I'm sure you're dealing with a lot of different age groups.
Sure. Well, I'll address, we do deal with ages, as I half-kiddingly say, ages 0 to 115. So, and that's half-kidding, because we have, I would say, as many elderly as young, and they enjoy just as much, if not more. So it's really quite interesting. As far as the demographic that's on the boat, it's everyone you can imagine. It's from every socioeconomic group, every nationality. It's amazing who we've met on board Redwich. It's really been a blessing and an honor for us. But with regard to your question, really with regard to the lake, to be honest, I've been on Lake Michigan as a professional captain since about 2003, on the lake since 2001 at Navy Pier out of Chicago. And I've been on the lake, and I grew up, my grandparents lived at 910 Lakeshore in Chicago, right on the lake. So every day of my life pretty much was staring at Lake Michigan, and then it became my office. and I love this lake. I really consider myself one of the sentinels of Lake Michigan. I'm constantly watching the weather, constantly watching the lake itself. What I've noticed in my history being on the lake is that it changes every 90 minutes. You know, you'll see the weather forecast for a day, and it says it'll be 75 degrees, wind out of the northwest at 15, but it really does change about every hour and a half. And it's interesting, because we sail about every hour and a half. We'll have different sail configurations almost every time we go out during a day that actually seems like it has stagnant weather. And so with regard to the lake, what's so impressive for me is one of the great scarcities that's going to unfortunately occur in the future, has been predicted, is fresh water. Mm-hmm. And we are sitting on 90% of the United States fresh water supply, and arguably 50% of the world. So the Great Lakes are an incredible resource that only become more and more valuable as time goes on. So it's critical that we protect the lakes, if you will. Water conservation has become, I think, one of the critical issues in the next 20, 30 years.
And Kenosha has 13 miles of it.
Yeah.
I know, it's pretty
special.
I'm so
proud of it.
The whole parade of sail, you'll get to see it.
I pretend I'm a teenager, and I pretend a lot. but, you know, you take water for granted. You drink it, you bathe in it, you throw it at people. But what you're talking about has got to, you know, hit them right between the eyes. What do you see when does a light bulb come on? Do you see? You can usually tell from people. Is it going to impact how they deal with water? Are you noticing that?
I think there's a, you know, people come aboard. I think there is a respect for it, certainly, but I think that respect certainly grows. It's enhanced in the experience. What's interesting is what I've found is that a lot of people have stared at Lake Michigan their entire life, enjoyed Lake Michigan. They've stepped in it at the beach, but they've never been on Lake Michigan, probably 25% of people in this area anyway. And so I think that once people finally feel what it's like to be out there, there's less fear because there is a lot of fear of Lake Michigan. People know it's a very risky body of water, and it is. Historically, there's more shipwrecks in this lake than any other lake in the Great Lakes, and there's an incredible number of shipwrecks, and then people hear stories and this and that, and everyone knows someone who got caught in something out there when they were fishing, and so I think people they gain more of an understanding of the lake, more of a feeling of safety and security, certainly on a boat like Redwich, and I do think as far as water itself, there is it's all sort of goes hand in hand, I think.
Yeah, as usual, the more you know, the less fear there is over most things, and more experience. Now, the ships themselves, we started to talk about what they are, but tell me what the difference is. We do have the time to talk about the difference between a brig, a bark.
A yeah. Schooner.
Okay.
Sure.
The schooner, that I can pronounce. I wasn't too sure about the other two.
Go ahead, Andrew. You want to explain the difference?
Okay, sure. I'd love to. So we'll start with a schooner. So a schooner has at least two masts. They look like vertical telephone poles. And a schooner is defined as the aft mast is at least as tall as the forward mast.
Okay.
That means they're either equal height or the aft mast, the rear mast, is taller than the forward mast. In the case of Redwich, both the masts are actually the same height. We also then, so that would be a schooner, but then we also have another mast on top of our aft mast, which is called a main top mast. So a schooner is at least two masts. There could be three, there could be four, there could be even up to five that I've seen. And the aft mast is at least as tall as the forward mast. Then there are different types of sail configurations that go on those masts. So with the traditional sailboats that you see in many photos, modern sailboats, you see triangular-shaped sails. Those are called Marconi sails. And you'll see a fore triangle, and you'll see an aft triangle. And that would be, if it was one mast, be a sloop. You could have two masts. It could be a schooner. If the aft mast, again, is taller with these triangular-shaped sails. But in the 19th century, in the early 1800s, and even the 1700s, they were into a technology which used something called a gaff rig scale or square sails. A schooner would have a gaff rig, and what that means is we have – I'm sorry if this gets that complicated. But sailors are very simple, and I'm going to explain this as simply as I can. And so we have very descriptive terms like a boom. What is a boom? It's a large piece of wood that looks like a horizontally held telephone pole coming off the vertical telephone pole. And why is it called a boom? Because if it clocks you in the head, it's the last thing you're ever going to hear is boom. So, we sailors, very simple people. We like simple terms that are descriptive. In the case of a Marconi rig or a triangular-shaped sail, there is one boom at the bottom. And so then there is one point at the top of the mast. So there are really three points. There's the point at the top of the mast. There's the point at the aft end of the boom. There's the point at the forward end of the boom. And so those three points are where you hook your canvas in. So there'll be a triangle. But then there's something called a gaff rig. And so that would have two booms that are both horizontal. And one lifts up toward the sky when you pull on your what are called halyards or your lines that pull the sail vertically. And so you have, it's not a rhomboid, but you would have a quadrilaterally shaped sail.
Ooh.
I actually studied this morning to make sure I had this right. It's not a rhombus. It is not a trapezoid. It's a quadrilateral. And so you have a squarish sail that is hung forward and aft on a schooner. Now, this is different than we'll now go to the barkentines and we'll go to the brig. The brigantine, and we'll also go to a ship. Let's start with ships because that's the word that we use most commonly.
Aren't they all ships?
They are not all ships. And so this is something that we enjoy talking about. You opened a can of worms here. You should not have asked me this question.
But we shouldn't call this the tall ships event.
Well, they, of course.
Go on.
So technically a ship would have three masts, and it would have all squaresails, which are transversely hung on each mast. And that's a ship, per se. Now, in the old days, in the 1800s, 1700s, late 1700s, early 1800s, you had ships, and they were quite prevalent, and they were very large. In order to have three masts, you needed a bigger boat. And because they were large, then the Navy started calling any big boat a ship because the ships were very big. That's where ship came from, technically. Mm-hmm. So a ship is at least three-masted vessel that has three sets of squaresails, which are like what you see in Johnny Depp and traditionally like on the Bounty, and what you're used to seeing on these
older pirate
ships, right, quote unquote. So a ship has three masts and squaresails on each mast. Then we have a brig. A brig has two sets of masts and squaresails on each one.
Okay.
And then we can go to a bark, which would have three masts like the ship, and the first two masts have squaresails like the brig. But it has another aft mast called the mizzen mast, or whatever they may call it, because they use different terms. And it has forward and aft sail, which is called a gaff rigged mainsail.
Okay.
Jane, aren't you glad you
I'm
asked?
I'm not going to. We could go so
test on this.
We could go so much deeper into this. I'm gonna stop there because people's eyes are probably rolling in their heads right now.
Well, I think what we're picking up from it, even if we have no possible memory, like I don't have, but it is that it's all about the mast construction and number of masts and the arrangement of the masts, as well as the types of sails,
configurations.
Right.
Exactly right.
And so people will be able to learn about that in person by being able to visit the tall ships and tour them, and they'll be able to see the masts up close and personal.
Jenny would say the hull is also an important facet of this, because a lot of them still have their wooden hulls or their metal with a wooden overlay to stay as true to their story or their history as possible. And Niagara is one of those. And Niagara is actually getting on 20 years now. She's being refit. And so Redwich is one of the few wooden ships we have in the fleet, purely wooden ships. So
very cool.
There were probably 75 left in the United States, commercial wooden vessels, believe it or not. So they're becoming, they're like dinosaurs. They're rare. And this is really a dying art form that we're trying to save. There are fewer and fewer, and the real issue is this. In order to build these boats, you need people capable of building them, and that is the issue. Yeah. A lot of the older generations, certainly, you know, generation after generation were trained, you know, from their father's father's mother's mother's father's mother, how to build these ships, and they were wonderful shipwrights. And they were in the East Coast, in Maine, some a little further down the coast, and then in the Great Northwest, in Seattle, Port Townsend. There are still areas where really there are still boat-building schools. There are few and far between, and so there are very few people who now know how to really keep these boats floating. We are blessed to have one individual who is in the Milwaukee area. His name's Peter Little. I don't mind saying his name. He's an amazing human being. We are so blessed to have him. He's a sixth-generation shipwright from Maine. He built the Dennis Sullivan, which is Milwaukee's tall ship.
Sure.
And
will be at the event.
Right. Originally, as I understand it, the story with the Sullivan was that the state of Wisconsin had built Discovery World, and they wanted to have a tall ship, which was a wonderful idea, so the public could get on the water and enjoy the history. And because the tall ships were such a part of the history of Milwaukee, Chicago, and actually every city pretty much, the greater cities in the Great Lakes, including Kenosha. If you look at our historic scenes, you'll see boats just like Redwich and bigger lining the seawalls, which is why it's so wonderful to see the tall ships coming to Kenosha, because it really, if you close your eyes a little bit and squint, man, you're back in the early 1800s. It's really a unique opportunity. But the state of Wisconsin wanted to build the Dennis Sullivan, and so they had a huge body of volunteers, and they had a huge amount of wood that was volunteered. And after about a year, they realized they had no clue really what they were doing. And they made a phone call to the state of Maine, found, 1-800-SHIPWRIGHT. They found Peter Little. He reluctantly flew to Milwaukee because he didn't really want to leave Maine. And then he's been here 20 years. He built the vessel. He works on Redwich. And he keeps us going. So because of people like this, we still exist. But without them, I don't know that we would.
It is pretty cool. Let me remind people that they are listening to Community Matters on WGTD FM 91.1, and we're talking about Kenosha Tall Ships, which is an event that is coming to Kenosha August 1st through the 4th, and featuring a good number of tall ships that you're going to be able to tour. You're going to be able to ride out on Lake Michigan, and of course there's a whole festival that's built around it, and it is a ticketed event.
One thing I want to add here, and I'm going to toss this to Chris a little bit. One of the things we want to make sure we do is get the ships more involved with the community. We've talked about the kids going on board. Well, one of the ships that's coming, that I mentioned, is sailing around the world right now, is the Picton Castle. And she started off as a trawler, and the captain went over to Europe, found her, and put masts on and turned her into a bark. And so she has a very large hold. And so what that ship does is collect books and school supplies and takes them around the world, and the crew then gets off for 3 weeks in a third world country, and they'll go and teach class and distribute all these supplies. So why don't you talk about what we're doing with Literacy Council?
Yes, we wanted to kind of expand on that opportunity with the mission of the Picton Castle, and we are working with the Kenosha Literacy Council as well as our Kenosha Public Library to develop a book drive, a school supply drive of our own, where visitors to the tall ships are encouraged to bring some things that may be used to benefit the Kenosha community locally.
Oh, super.
And kind of share the story with the Picton Castle, and there'll be related programming in the festival footprint as well. Between touring the ships, we expect people might want to take a little break and do some listening to a program from the library or the Literacy Council and learn more about what they can do.
Let's talk more about how you're interacting with the community. It sounds like the Library and Literacy Council will be on site. Is that the case, or at least for part of the time?
Yes, that's the thought, that they will be conducting this drive for supplies, but also providing some of the programming, some storytelling. I'm sure some tales about ships will not be hard to come by.
No.
So we're excited to engage them, but honestly, this project involves so many community partners that we really reached out to the Kenosha community and really want to work with a lot of people. First, to identify those kids we mentioned that may benefit from a field trip, learning about the ships, and some of those older kids will be going on sailaways. We have our own Kenosha Parks Alliance, which works with kids in some of the central city parks for summer programming. We're working with the YMCA to tie in some water safety. And they're happy to be part of our endeavors as well. So there's a lot of good partnerships that we're continuing to build on those, because we really want to embrace the Kenosha community as well as the very many visitors we expect from out of town.
Yeah, this is a tourism initiative as well as it is a Kenosha initiative. We really want people to come downtown, get a sense of it. And so one of the collateral pieces we have is what we call a passport. Actually looks like a real passport with the pebble stock and everything, and you can get the pages stamped, so when you go to the Picton Castle page and you stamp it, and it becomes a commemorative piece for you. Well, what we want to do is put a coupon page inside that, so you can go and enjoy parts of Kenosha, come back, you know, try a restaurant in the area. A lot of people come down. My experience with Kenosha is people come downtown and they go, I had no idea it was so pretty down here, and we need to come back more often. Well, there's all these museums, they're discovering it for the first time. So we have the whole Kenosha component, and then we've also got the tourism component. So we really hope people, that takeaway is that they have to come back.
Absolutely. And the Kenosha History Center and the Kenosha Public Museum and the Civil War Museum all are partnering with us as well for the programming and to tie in some of their missions. And we expect a lot of our visitors will just get a taste of what those museums have to offer and want to come back and explore further.
I was wondering because, well, the History Museum and the Lighthouse Museum in particular, I know really does have a lot of fabulous displays that seemed to picture exactly what you had been describing earlier, Andrew, with the ships in the harbor. And I think that should be an exciting part to kind of bring a lot of what the museums have to offer alive during that time period. So that sounds really exciting. One of the things we really did not talk about, and know that these ships are reproductions. It's not like the ship has been around for 200 years and managed to survive. I guess, how realistic is it to actually pilot one of these ships? Do they add a lot of mod cons there that then you're really making it look like a vessel, but you know there's a button to push and everything's fabulous, or is it real?
Well, I could speak for Red Witch, and probably I could speak for the other vessels as well. There are absolutely authentic replicas, at least in the case of Red Witch. Red Witch, I know her history quite well. She was built by the current executive director of the San Diego Maritime Museum. He's a PhD in maritime history. His name is Dr. Raymond Ashley, and he's a very well-known guy. And he went to southern Alabama in order to build Red Witch because he wanted a certain type of tree. He found the trees, milled the trees, built the boat, and built it exactly true to scale of an 1830s Great Lakes working schooner. She's exact. So as I tell people when they come aboard Red Witch, but for the engine, which is going to help us to get out of the harbor, we have radar, we have GPS. No one can see that. It's below deck. It's exactly the same as being on one of the old schooners from the 1830s. So it's an absolutely authentic experience from that regard.
And if I could just add on that, because this is a very good point, these ships are prepared to sail wherever they go. They don't motor. They sail. And the only requirement they have is whatever the Coast Guard tells them that they have to have on board. And so you live as it is.
So they comply with local requirements or federal requirements in order to not endanger people, but primarily these are authentic ships. I know this is going to sound really stupid and it shows my ignorance about sailing, but is it harder to steer these things than some of the more modern?
Well, they're not a car.
I know.
You can't back into a parking spot.
Dang.
Well, you can.
You can.
You have to know what you're doing.
Yeah. Fend off. No, I'm kidding. But
honestly, actually, Chris was at the helm. Oh, do you remember, Chris?
Yeah, I was.
What was it like, Chris?
It was delightful. I really enjoyed it.
But do you remember steering the wheel and she was steering the boat and it was just like,
and it's like the slightest correction and it really followed. I didn't try to dock it or do anything too fancy.
That's probably good.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
But one of the things that these ships are also trying to do is to grow the maritime industry. It is aging out. Whereas Andrew said, and the ships are getting older, the people are getting older, and we don't have anyone to take their places. So the art of sail training and putting kids on board, we're hoping that they will want to do more of it and turn them into a sailor. They might go to Woods Hole. They might want to be the next Bob Ballard and do research on below the water. We're working with Wisconsin Coastal Management, which came in as a sponsor for us, and that's a lot of where the green came from. But they like to use these vessels because they're quiet. They don't disrupt anything. So it's really easy for them to study plastics on board a ship like us because we can sail. We don't have to turn on our engines. We don't make a lot of noise wherever we're going. So the fine art of sailing actually has a lot of modern opportunities that go along with it. So we're hoping we can get kids just as excited as we are about it.
The tall ships and the historic component to it and that they're authentic replications of really big working ships. And I'm using ships as my umbrella term, not as the exact term here. I did learn a lot today. But how does that relate to just the art and sport of sailing? Do you feel that this also helps build like what the Kenosha Sailing Center tries to do through the Yacht Club? And how does that relate? They seem so different from one another, yet it's the same body of water. It's a sail.
Putting kids on board a ship and telling them to work as a team is really no different than putting them on a basketball team. They have to play together. They have to work. Everything works in tandem with each other. And sailing is the same way. It's just a different dynamic. And so I think the takeaway is that they will learn more about themselves and be brave as a result of it. They might actually get in the water. I'm sure Andrea would agree with this. A lot of the kids that we work with, because you try and work with kids from the inner city who don't know how to swim, and a lot of their handlers or teachers will say to them, oh, I wouldn't do that. I'll get seasick, or I don't know how to swim, so how could you do that? And you instill fear in the child before they've even stepped on board the ship. So if we can get them at the beginning and get their feet wet and get them to embrace the whole aerodynamic of sail, they know what an airplane is, but they don't know how wind works as it relates to a ship, and you can make it work. You can get it going up to 8 knots or 10 knots and feel that rush all on your own. So it's pretty special. So that's what we hope we can do with kids. I don't know if I answered your question.
Something we run into, and we ran into this in Chicago quite extensively and even up in Kenosha, is that there are sailing programs for kids. I think they must look like they're 6, 7 years old. These are tiny little kids in little boats, and they're amazing sailors. And they gain such confidence, and I think it really changes their lives.
Yeah.
I really think it's a powerful experience, and maybe I would argue one of the most powerful experiences for a young child.
Mm. Very cool.
Yeah, learning to sail is a byproduct of that whole other dynamic of being one with yourself, the leadership, being on a team, and the takeaway is amazing. I'll tell you a quick story. We've got time? We're okay?
We do.
Okay.
We do.
This will be fast. There are only about 250 tall ships, working tall ships in the world today, and two of them are at the L.A. Maritime Museum. And they built a ship in the parking lot of this museum, and all the kids from the barrio, because that one little stretch of water in Los Angeles is actually in San Pedro. And it's quite small. That's where the harbor is. And all these kids came down from the barrio to say, what are you doing? And a lot of them kind of wanted to help out, and this looked really interesting. Well, so all these barrio kids became sailors, and they figured out what a lanyard was and a halyard, and that became their gang language. And so then once they grew up, their siblings would come down and say, I want to do what he did. And so then they became sailors and sailed away with us. And the port of L.A. saw the success, that the graduation rates increased, that they built a second ship in the parking lot of the L.A. Maritime Institute. And so we now have the Exie Johnson and Irving Johnson sailed around the world multiple times, taking kids with them so that they could experience life on board and see the world. And so that part of that is what sail training is all about, but that's a perfect example of how we can turn lives around.
In our last few moments, I would like to try to draw this all together, because I think I have gained a much greater understanding about how the community can be enriched by having the tall ships here. And all of that is kind of being symbolized by having a fun event created around it, and that's the tall ships, August 1st through the 4th. Chris, can you run down the schedule? We kind of breezed through it at the beginning of the program. Can you do that again now?
Absolutely. And I would direct people to our website, KenoshaTallships.com, for further information and event tickets, as well as the sail away tickets. Again, Parade of Sail on Thursday, August 1st. And then the festival will be open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, August 2nd through the 4th, from 10 a.m. till 6 p.m.
And you mentioned the parade. Again, that's something that you can see. Was that between Pennoyer Park and the
Kemper
Harbor
Center? But the best viewing will be down at the harbor as the ships come into dock, and we have peanut butter and jam going on in the evening. So that's where the party will be.
Okay. And you and I know what peanut butter and jam is, and it's not just something to eat. It's a great concert.
It is. It's a free concert series outside City Hall in Veterans Memorial Park at 54th Street and 6th Avenue. Concert starts at 6 p.m.
And that's a free concert.
It's a
that's
free
not
concert.
Necessarily behind the gates of
nope,
the event.
No, it's not. The gates will not be open for ship tours yet. The ships will all be docking, but you can see them and enjoy some music.
That sounds fabulous. I'd like to thank the three of you for joining us today on Community Matters. We've been talking with Chris Coachman, Patty Locke, and Andrew Sadock. And I learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners did as well. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Swing, blues, bop, and more is available 24 hours a day on your desktop, laptop, smartphone, or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org, where you can listen live, online, 24 hours a day. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz WGTD HD2 is available via HD radio. For more information, call 262-564-3030.
Support comes from the Lake Geneva Symphony, whose annual gala at the Grand Geneva, Saturday evening, February 16th, is presented by Ulla Brunk. Enjoy dinner, auction, and dancing with the symphony's swing band. For tickets, visit lakegenevaorchestra.org.
Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea. Love is in the air and Valentine's Day is just around the corner. Don't forget to celebrate loved ones with gourmet chocolates and candy, beautiful Swarovski jewelry, and more.